Hello, and welcome to the Monocle Weekly, Edition 50. I'm Tyler Brulé. It's Sunday, March 14th, 2010, and today we've got a little change of pace for you as we're coming to you from Rio de Janeiro. Rob is here in the tiniest thong you've never seen. Andrew's in his little Orlebar brown trunkies. Our producer Alex is on the other side of the glass in a jalaba, and I'm in something cool and breathable from a nice tailor in Sao Paulo. Welcome, gentlemen. How are you?
Very good. Very
well. You almost seem like a resident here. We've been sort of on the streets of Leblanc very, very briefly. But everyone seems to know you, Andrew. You obviously had a very good time when you were down here doing the survey.
What a job, hey. I managed to kind of persuade you to send me here twice in 2 months. So.
And I'm surprised you didn't sort of trot me around and say, oh, and this is the new bureau that we're opening as well.
Well, I do keep on looking at these kind of buildings in Leblanc, kind of, you know, covered in greenery and these amazing 60s blocks, and think it wouldn't be bad to kind of have a place down here. But I think you've got your eye on Sao Paulo as well, I think, potentially. So
better connections, as we found. The interesting flight that we had across as well, which was interesting. I was sort of course, asking the pilot the whole time, is the weather going to be good? And it was funny. The pilot was sort of gathered in the galley. We were on British Airways. And he said, oh, yeah, it's going to be fine. He said, we said about sort of 700 miles from here is where that Air France plane went down last year. But he said, oh, he said, you know, the weather looks fine. And then this flight attendant comes out of the galley and she said, oh, you know, Captain, you need to go back because the weather's going to be bad 30 minutes from now. And so the plane, as we know, sort of zigzagged. I didn't tell you that, did I, remember, Andrew?
Well, there was a point where it was amazing when you're mid-Atlantic and you feel the plane banking to kind of turn away from something.
These clouds. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You look out the window and there's a storm heading your way.
Rob, how did you enjoy the flight down?
I loved it. It was good. I didn't notice any
You didn't
bumps.
Cry watching any films?
No. I watched Fantastic Mr. Fox. There was a moment in it. You know, where there was a moment of extreme peril, as I think they call it on the film classification, features extreme peril, which did get me kind of, there was a dry moment in the throat. But I was
But not wet of eye.
But dry of face, dry of eye.
Or wet of pants.
Yeah. It's a nice place to, it's a good place to have our 50th birthday of the show.
It is, absolutely.
I just wish I didn't have to wear my birthday suit, practically. But it is hot.
Andrew, what do you have lined up for us? I know that we've got some of the people that you chatted to. When we did the survey, are going to be on this program, and also we should tell everyone that we're going to be back here again next week as well.
The first person I've got coming in is Maria Teresa Leal, who works for Cooper Rocker, which is an extraordinary organization which has kind of been working in the favelas with now 200 seamstresses. And what they do is they make fashion in the favelas, but instead of kind of making cheap products and aligning themselves with kind of, you know, slightly dodgy companies, what they've done is they've managed to kind of break into the kind of upper echelons of fashion and make, you know, really strong partnerships to, you know, give these women security and well-paid jobs as well.
I know also we've lined up a gentleman named Philippe Goyche. It's interesting because obviously there's so much news about that this city, of course, winning the Olympics. But, of course, this also being one of the sort of the major sort of global HQs for the BRIC nations, that it's interesting there's a city initiative as well to actually set up a BRIC think tank. And that'll be fascinating to see as they're going to be hosting Indians and Russians and Chinese. So Philippe Goyche is going to be on the program. Rob, have you been sort of scoping out the streets for a bit of musical talent? What
have
you come up with?
We have a lovely five-piece in the studio called Casorina, who are Sam-style band, Rio-based. So we've been checking out their stuff online, and suddenly here they are before us.
Absolutely. And also we have Zeca Camargo, who is, you back, or you front, I should say, maybe front and back, I don't know, a program called Fantastico, which is on Globo. And when we were talking about it, I was trying to sort of figure out, it's got a Sunday night time slot, and so it's early evening, and sort of sounded a little bit like 60 Minutes.
But that was a good starting point.
And then you said it's 2.5 hours.
2.5 hours. It's like more like 180 minutes or something, right? And it's a pretty mixed bag, as we say. I mean, we have like special features, sports, and celebrity stuff, and hard news, everything. And we have to keep people entertained for 2.5 hours. So it's a pretty big challenge.
When you're looking at a country which has a population of just shy of 200 million people, what type of viewing figures do you get on Globo on a Sunday evening?
Well, on a good Sunday, we would have like 1/4 of this population at least watching us, which is good. And see, it's really, it's huge. We're talking about 40, 50 million people, which is big. But again, this is like, it's a big country, as I said, and the story of maybe TV Globo here in Brazil says a lot about the way people watch TV. And this is a very like established show. Mm. We've been there around for, 37 years this August. So people, it's part of people's lives. You see, even if they don't watch the whole show, because 2.5 hours, even today, especially today, is a big task, right? To have somebody sitting there for 2.5 hours, even if it's at home, so it's too long. But they watch a little bit, and of course they watch everything on the internet now. And most of the topics that Fantastico discusses every Sunday, they become like topics on Monday mornings in schools and offices and all that. So it's a big reference for everybody.
With Globo, where you have, of course, radio, and then you, of course, have, you know, a variety of other television networks, and there's also the print side of the business as well. How much cross-integration is there? Because in many ways, what's interesting about Globo is it seems that it's a model that has been followed in other nations. I mean, we've sort of seen this consolidation elsewhere in the world, but this is already happening in Brazil.
It's a very old model in a way. Actually, it all started with a newspaper. There's this newspaper called O Globo, which is where it all started. Then came radio, and then, of course, television. Actually, from it's like in the biography of the TV, the owner of Globo newspaper started the TV business when he was in his 60s. So it's pretty amazing. So everything came after as an afterthought, and not really a very programmed thing. It didn't happen like that, but it works well. And there's a lot of integration, yes, between newspaper, radios, and television, not all the shows on television, and even cable sometimes.
Great. Well, Zeca Camargo, we're going to be chatting to you a little bit more about media, hopefully, throughout the program as well. And, of course, it wouldn't be Brazil without a bit of music, or Rio without a bit of samba. Across the studio today is Casarinha, major players in the new carioca samba scene in this city, and here they are with Surtidão.
Papel que não preciso, não, pois o samba que hoje canto é íntimo e tem razão de ser. As palavras não são sem querer, eu já sei secar meu pranto com a força do meu bordão. Autêntica inspiração de quem só vê beleza. O samba é universal, razão primordial do som. Ninguém detém o dom que digo com certeza. O nosso carnaval, mas vem desata criar também, que a nossa natureza precisa brincar de Deus, provar que é dos seus. Já vou, o mestre me endossou de quem tem no coração amor que não precisa ser tidão. É papel que não preciso, não, pois o samba que hoje canto é íntimo e tem razão.
That was Surtidão by Casarinha. Gentlemen, thank you. That was fantastic. Obrigado. I just want to go, Zeca, before we went to the band, I'm wondering how the media diet, when you sort of look at the major stories that play in this country, and on the way to the studio today, it was interesting as we were passing by one of the favelas on the way, there seemed to be a very heavy operation, three helicopters. Andrew was actually, we had a story very early on in the magazine about this Huey that the police have bought here, which is really you know, a Vietnam era gunship. And there it was with two other helicopters. And I'm wondering, when you look at the news diet, not just in this city, but elsewhere, how much, let's say, you know, the top one or two stories, would the news lead on a story like that?
A story like that will be leading. Although it's like when you told me, I mean, I was here inside the studio, I didn't see the helicopters like flying over here. But what you told me, it just seems like another business as usual. So, you know, here they are again. And so there will be probably some news about this on tonight on the TV show. But yes, because the TV Globe is based in Rio, and of course, it's a big city. Everything that happens here has a repercussion in all over the country. So all the attention is focused on stories like violence and stuff like that. But we cannot avoid that. You see, there's a war going on here, and we just have to cover it. We try to, I mean, we've been, especially the show I work for, Fantastico, has been covered these issues a lot, and we try to be very careful because we don't want to glamorize anything, and we don't want to make it like meaningless. I mean, these things happen, they are serious, we have to treat them as a big problem, but we don't want to make them very superficial in a way that people sometimes watch the violence and say, oh, just another day as usual, as I was saying. So we try to give it some focus, and especially try to understand exactly why is this happening. I mean, we're not going to get rid of like drugs and stuff, and especially the favelas in the city. So when we cover that, Fantastico is like a special show, it's not a daily news show. So probably if there's something really serious going on this week at this favela, we're talking about Rocinha here, which is the one close to the studio, we will try to give it like a different twist and try to understand why exactly is the police like invading this favela and try to give some context on that.
Do you have dedicated correspondents as well who just, I mean, as you call it, you know, it's a war, who are actually also focused on covering the stories in these areas? So special news teams that are equipped to also deal with this?
Definitely. It's a very difficult area to cover because we had in the past some problems, some big problems. And actually, we don't really enter the favelas without any planning, you see. Actually, we don't enter at all. I mean, it's a danger zone, so we wouldn't go there. We had a couple of years ago a big accident, actually. We lost a news colleague that went there doing it. He was kind of undercover, and they were found by drug gangs and all that, and they killed him and all that. After this incident, we decided not to go too deep into that. And whenever we have to cover that, we have to be really careful. It's complicated.
But what's extraordinary is if that happens, if the media aren't going in there and, you know, the police aren't going in there, you do have a kind of a, you know, almost like two cities in within these borders. The funny thing was, when I was here last time, and I'd like to know your take on it, there did seem to be for the first time some real ambition to engage with the problem at two levels. One, socially building libraries and schools.
Indeed.
And two, with this kind of gunship kind of quality of policing as well. Do you think there is a kind of a change in attitude that actually we do need to be able to go into these favelas finally?
Well, the fact that the favelas are reacting like that, like the thing we saw today, and the a couple of weeks ago there was a big issue about a helicopter that was like shut down in one of those favelas. We mentioned that. The fact that the favelas gang members, gang leaders are reacting like that means that they realize some actions being taken, you see, and they feel threatened in a way. It has never been that serious, and the conflicts have never been so dangerous because they are reacting to an answer of the community, the government, or the authorities and everybody. They are trying to do something with politics, you see, with education, with some social projects and all that. And of course, they're losing ground on the drug traffic, and then they react in that way. So, yeah, it's getting nastier in a way if you look at one way, but people are very helpful. And some favelas actually has been turned to a very nice neighborhoods to live. I mean, in the last couple of years, 2 or 3 years, 4 or 5 major favelas, they have been totally transformed with police occupation. You see? I'm very optimistic about what's going on. And, of course, we would cover any of the improvements on these areas.
I wondered how positive you think the media are, and maybe the government as well, the government of Rio are, about the positives to come out of the favelas, if there are any of the music, any of the sports stars that might have risen out of nothing. You know, is that something that's kind of easy to promote, or is it a tricky thing?
Definitely, because it's a very popular issue. So you want to have like a band or like an athlete coming out of a favela, he becomes a hero. That's very, very easy to promote. So in our show, Fantastico, there's this great actress that performs sometimes as a reporter. She's called Regina Cazé, and she has some special projects, a special series called Periferia, them, actually. We call periferia, it's like the suburbs here. It's a very general term. But, and she goes there and find talent there, like bands and just some character on there, on the favelas. And she brings that to Fantástico. So we have like one-fourth, one-fifth of the population in Brazil seeing some positive examples of what can be done there. Of course, that's not a paradise. It's not a very very optimistic place to live. But yeah, there are some positive signs coming out of that.
I wonder, when you look at the flip side of news coverage, and of course, you know, here is a country which, you know, plays a much more prominent role on the global stage. And before we went on air, we were just chatting about, you know, the fact that Globo, in many ways, is much better staffed in terms of its international bureaus beyond the borders of Latin America. Mm-hmm. You have a bureau in Buenos Aires, but in Europe and elsewhere, you're well staffed. Do you think that the diet for international news, that Brazil's place in the world, so when the president is traveling overseas, mm-hmm. that there's sort of much more reporting back? I mean, of course, this has been a very interesting last 2 weeks,
yes.
for this country. We're not going to go necessarily toe the line in terms of sanctions against Iran. In fact, we're going to impose trade sanctions on America. So I'm wondering how much the role of your foreign minister and also you know, everything that happens out of Brazil and Brasilia's role mm-hmm. as a global capital has changed for the viewership.
It's still very peripheral. People not really paying too much attention on that. Of course, the president's travels, they play a major role on that, and especially in building some awareness for like the general audience. But no, actually, the fact that we have a small interest in international affairs tells a lot about how Brazil has still many internal issues to solve. And I would say that will be the focus of the audience. And they want to know about Brazil and how much we're getting better and what are actually the big problems we have to face here. So in terms of interest, yeah, unless, of course, it's a big... Even if when there's something like a Chilean earthquake, of course, all our attentions go towards that and we try to help. Same thing in Haiti. But when it comes to politics, and as you mentioned, I mean, the relationship with Iran and what's going on and which are the interests behind that, no, people would have a lot of difficulty trying to understand that, you see, and second, to be interested on that. So it will take maybe another generation. And these are important issues, of course.
Sure.
So I think because it is growing and because of... well, there's much more facilities, and the media itself is much more friendly. So the way that we are trying to communicate with people is becoming easier and easier. Because news used to be very formal. As well. I'm a talking head here talking to you, so you better understand what I'm saying. But of course, internet and the cable television, everything changed. So we're trying to like be more accessible to people. So I'm very optimistic about the interest growing, but it will take maybe another generation to get there.
Andrew, does that strike you as a huge opportunity? The role, and of course, you know, we're always sort of talking about various aspects of soft power. So whether it's a Globo, whether it's another media brand, do you think that there is an opportunity? You know, aside from what happens at the foreign ministry in Brasilia, but the role that this country can play in terms of having a unique international voice.
I think you're slightly underplaying yourself, because I think even Globo, what's interesting is through the telenovelas, you know, that which are now exported all around the world, you know, that there is Brazilian soft power through culture, especially, you know, with the band here in the studio, music, TV, increasingly film. I think the kind of the Brazilian sensibility, how Brazilians see the world, is increasingly popular and increasingly kind of, you know, sold. I think on the strict foreign policy thing, it may still be a kind of minority who, you know, get engaged with that in this country, the same as it would be around the world. But you do really, really feel a kind of sense of, you know, Brazil coming out of itself, kind of being, you know, actually quite an important voice now.
Well, you didn't mention sports, but they play a big part as well. We're talking about soccer, right?
We didn't want to mention it.
But the thing is that, well, I travel a lot around the world, and one of the biggest lessons I've learned is the moment you introduce one to somebody, just say you're a Brazilian, because it really opens a lot of doors. You see, they are interested in Brazil. I mean, if I go into some really far-off places for us, say, just came back from Shanghai, you're Brazilian. What is that? And they would be curious about that. I mean, maybe for the soccer, maybe for the music, maybe for the whole culture, maybe for some bizarre curiosity about a very far country for them. But I like to say, as soon as I get to play, that I'm Brazilian, because it opens really.
Well, add in the World Cup and the Olympics.
And this city. And it actually gives us a lot of scope for what we're going to be talking about in terms of this country's relationships with the RIC countries. But before that, I think it's probably time to go back across the studio to listen to another fantastic export. This is the song Minha Filosofia, and this is Casarinha again.
Vai passar esse meu mal-estar, esse nó. Vai passar esse meu mal-estar, esse nó na garganta. Deixe estar, o próprio tempo dirá. Água demais mata a planta. Tudo que é muito é demais. Perdoe a redundância. Entre linhas só quero lembrar: a terra fértil um dia se cansa. É uma questão de esperar. Relógio que atrasa não adianta. E remédio que cura também pode matar. Como água demais mata a planta. Vai passar esse meu mal-estar, esse nó na garganta. Deixe estar, o próprio tempo dirá. Água demais mata a planta.
Is Minha Filosofia by Casarinha, our live samba band here on the Monocle Weekly today in Rio de Janeiro. Now, if you caught our Rio special, you'll have read about Rio not only playing host to the Olympics, but also a new think tank for BRIC nations. To tell us more, we're joined by Felipe Goish, Municipal Secretary of Development, there's a mouthful, for the government of Rio de Janeiro. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
I saw you in New York last week. You were in much more casual attire. Everyone around the table today is in swimwear. You've arrived in a suit. It was just interesting, before you arrived at the studio, Zeko was just sort of talking about you were in China recently,
right?
And just the reception that Brazilians receive. And one thing we've always talked about at the magazine is I've often sort of felt, whether you read the Financial Times, I think when you look at a lot of international media, there is so much attention on the RIC nations. So I think, in London, we very much sort of focus on the Russian community, all of the money that they've brought into the UK. I think that also affects, coverage as well. Certainly, of course, because of colonial relationships with India, it's very much the same thing. And everyone wants to talk about China. But I think one thing that we've always maintained is that that this country has lifestyle. And I know some people in India are going to get angry about what I'm about to say. But none of those countries do. And I always say, what is the true measure of a great BRIC country? And it's a place that you would want to actually buy a second home in. And I'd like to have a second home here, or I could even see myself retiring here. So I'm wondering what's going to happen at this think tank, and what is the dialogue, and is the role really for understanding on the part of Brazil and how it fits in terms of, fast emerging economies? Or is it also a place that other nations can come and learn as well?
Yeah, it's much more the latter. Well, what we want to do here is basically to bring people around the world, people that are interested in these emerging powers, to discuss and reflect about the role they can play in the world and what's the future looks like for this. There's this study by Jim O'Neill from Goldman Sachs about the relevance of the BRIC countries. And he basically projects that by 2050, these countries will be great power in the world. They will be much bigger than Europe and U.S. And that thought made us think about what we should be discussing among these countries. And that's the logic of the think tank. It's basically putting together academia, politicians, business people to discuss what's the role of these four countries, what they have in common, what are the differences, and you know how they should discuss things and think forward.
And what form will this take? Are we actually talking about a structure? I mean, imagine to launch, you're not going to be building a new building, but the ambitions in terms of, and who will, you know, who will this think tank house to start?
Well, first of all, we thought that the government would not be the good way to approach the problem. So what we did is we invited the university from Rio, which is PUC, a great university. They have this international relations area, and we put the problem to them. And they are the ones who are putting this together in reality. The government is just backing up, bringing the idea, but the ones who are pushing this forward are the academics, the professors who do understand about international relations. They are the ones pushing this forward.
Andrew, I think you would want to maybe a seat at a think tank which is housed at PUC, wouldn't you? It sounds also very sort of curiously Rio. I wanted to ask you, Andrew, when you were down here, do you think that, aside from the fact it's interesting that the city is taking a lead role in hosting something like this? Because, you know, obviously, I mean, you know, the BRIC discussion and certainly, you know, the concept has been with us for some time now. But I think quite innovative that this city, but also this country, is taking the lead role.
I thought what was interesting and perhaps slightly cheeky is that, you know, the Rio, which I talked about when we came back to London with you, is, you know, that what is extraordinary is there's a real sense of Rio getting its pride back, of knowing exactly what it wants to do, of being a great city again. And it's interesting that, you know, this think tank isn't going to sit in Brasilia. It's not going to sit in Sao Paulo. It's going to sit in Rio. And that is because of a generation of people here who are thinking, actually, Rio should be a seat of learning. It should be a seat of business. And an interesting, I think the city is donating a proper building, isn't it, for it,
yeah,
to be housed in?
Yeah, exactly. There is a very interesting building in the Botafogo neighborhood, which belonged to Afonso Arinos, a very important politician that dealt a lot with international relations. Now it belongs to the city, and the city is donating the building, a very nice house in Botafogo, which will be the headquarters of this BRIC think tank.
Zeka, do you think, when we were chatting a little bit earlier about Brazilians recognizing their role in the world, and mm-hmm. I think also the world recognizing the role of Brazil, is there an awareness, and when you talked about just the viewership, let's say, that a program like yours has, of the power of Brazilian brands? Someone can look at, a bank in this country which, has a market cap bigger than American Express. Is there a realization that, Embraer is, a true global player, as much as Boeing or Airbus?
Again, it's growing, that sort of impression. We used to have this sort of thinking when it comes to, samba and futebol. You see, but what I think it's happening now, they're realizing we're going beyond there. I mean, there's people here who want to engage in some more serious discussions that just like the fun part of being Brazilian. And again, we try to reflect that, to translate that on the news piece we made. And I guess the audience, yes, is responding quite well to that, which again comes with a new generation of people thinking different about Brazil. So, we just don't want to stay in the backyard anymore. See, we're trying to push a little bit forward in issues that are not just the big old cliches that we've been known for.
I mean, Felipe, is there a worry or is there a concern that you erect this think tank and everyone gets so serious that maybe Brazil will sort of lose its fun and interesting side, that people are going to want to think, so hard, how are we going to compete with Beijing? How are we going to get it one up on Washington? That you're going to lose your rhythm.
I think there is that risk. We have to be aware of that. I mean, we have to be open-minded. We have to be somewhat flexible about what's going to happen. But we had the first seminar about this BRIC thing, and the Chinese were very strong in their positions. And their positions were tough and much tougher than we thought. So at some point in that seminar, the climate was beginning to be a little bit awkward. But then, the Brazilians came and the Indians helped and so on. And I think at the end it worked out well. But
what were the Russians doing?
The Russians were, I think, drinking some vodka.
They're out in the hallway having a cigarette.
Exactly, they were smoking. But at the end, worked well. And we have to be aware of that. And one thing that I'd like to notice is, you know, I think Brazil is the right place for open debate. If we think about the BRICS, there's no other place among the four countries. It's a little bit arrogant from my part to say that as a Brazilian.
Okay, you're the host. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly. We're paying. So, but I have to say that it's really a place where you can say what you think and you don't get blamed about that. So I think it's the right place to do it among the four countries.
We are pretty flexible. I think it has to do with, like, we're a young country. I mean, when you compare to India and China and Russia, of course, I mean, everything here is so new. And we are, because of that, we're very flexible. We pretty much accept many different points of view and all that. So we don't really have a big engagement with history, as you know.
If I was a visiting academic from Beijing, I think I know which city I'd want to go to.
Yeah,
okay. I'll go to Rio. Let's have it in Rio.
But if we were on the presidential jet with Lula, do you think that, you know, amongst his advisors, you know, is there an understanding that part of the power that this country has, you know, is its softer side? And this is something where, you know, I don't think that any of where the RICS can't compete with you. And, you know, is there a realization that that is a true export?
I think so. I think clearly Lula represents a lot that sense, that notion of being flexible, of speaking freely. He is a person that speaks what comes to his mind at all times. And I think he's also a person who fights for democracy in Brazil. So I think it's really part of the way we do things and the way we behave in this country.
Mm. Well, I think it's time for a bit more soft power. We're going to cross over to the studio. We have Cajurinha here, and the song is Ejau. But before that, Filipe Gush, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
A necessidade angustiante de traduzir o que a alma quer dizer é João. Demorei pra entender o valor de uma canção cuja obrigação é só ser. Pra que calar a voz do peito? Defeito ser urgente, sem jeito, me permito indolente dialogar contigo impunemente. É João, me ajuda a criar sem temor. Pra que um dia eu também seja espelho, meu samba será firme e vermelho da hemorragia incurável e indolor. É João. Hoje sei respeitar o clamor do coração pra soltar a voz e cantar o amor. Lalaiá. Thank you.
That was A Joao by Cajurinha. It's a revolving door here at the Monaco Weekly in Rio. Our next guest, Maria Teresa Leal, founded Copa Roja in the 1980s, a coalition of seamstresses in the Rochinha favela, who now count Paul Smith, Osclen, and Agent Provocateur among their clients. Is this a new model for bringing manufacturing back into the heart of cities and also reviving depressed neighborhoods? Well, Maria Teresa Leal is here to tell us more. Welcome.
Thank you.
I guess, as I was saying, two things. I mean, one, and perhaps from, you know, a European context, certainly from a North American context, it's interesting when you look at actually making things in cities, particularly clothing. Certainly, you know, in Europe and the United States, most of it has moved to China. A lot of it has been offshored, and more often than not, the manufacturing is happening way out in the suburbs, in large modern factories. So, what was the inspiration behind developing this project?
Well, actually, we work with artisans, not exactly with seamstresses. And I began to work in Rocinha. Since I began this work, I observed that many women, most of them, they were from the northeast of Brazil. So they have the culture skills to work by hands, to do crochets, embroideries. So the idea was to do something together with people to improve their lives. So that's why we began working together and organizing the cooperative. And the idea to do the bridge between the skills and the factories, the brands, the fashion brands and the designers is to think an alternative way to think and to have a different vision about social projects. Because in my country, social policies are really poor. You see, they have a smaller vision, you see, much more focused on assistentialism than to think a good strategy to give autonomy and liberty for people.
So how do you go out and market yourself? I mean, we're sort of talking about the names. Okay, fine, Osclen is a Brazilian brand. Maybe the dialogue would be different. But, I mean, certainly, making a connection with companies internationally, I mean, how has that happened?
Well, I believe that smells beautiful. That's why we began working by ourselves, you see, producing the pieces that the women in the past had the skills to be able to produce. And step by step, we improved the quality of production. And in 2000, I thought a proposal of an event that I created this bridge between the skills of the artisans and the stylists, fashion, the designers and the artists. And in this way, we made the bridge and we began to work with what I call commercial partners. And, of course, I began working with my friends and having good results. People began to see our capacity of production, the quality of the work, and step by step, we moved forward.
There was a lot of media coverage because we thought it was very interesting, this kind of initiative. So I remember, I mean, newspapers, especially TV shows, they were like, oh, that's a different way to look at fashion, you see. And I remember the attention it all got at the beginning of the year 2000 on that. And that was like part of maybe the bringing up of this.
Well, sure, we have very good visibility because we work with fashion. And so fashion is always linked with media. And I guess the idea is to mix all this environment and looking all the time to this kind of sustainable development, you see, differently than to be, you see, doing things with poor people. We will not move. Never. We will never move.
I just wonder, it's interesting that often, you know, if you make something, most brands are proud that they make things in very kind of modern factories and that people are paid high salaries. Is it complicated for a brand, say, Lacoste, I think, have done some work with you, do they then say to their, you know, their customers, we're proud to make this in a favela? It's quite a complicated message for them sometimes, do you think?
Well, are you asking about the brands,
yeah,
the fashion brands?
Do the brands promote the fact that it's made here in the favela?
No. I guess it's the opposite. It's right the opposite, because now it's very fashionable to work with social responsibility.
Okay.
So when we began with, it wasn't happen. You see, nobody was talking about social responsibility, but now it's very fashionable. So the idea is, yes, to be working together. Big brands, fashion brands as Lacoste. We work, the last project that we were involved was with Lacoste. And Lacoste was very proud to work with Copacabana. I was in Paris in the beginning of December, and in Marais, there was a big windows display with an enormous text, you see, talking about the project involving Campana's brothers and Copacabana, and the windows display was showing the polos there.
When you were sort of talking about these brands, and it's particularly sort of this project with Lacoste, has it also allowed you to be also, I think, a little bit more aggressive also as a businesswoman too, to say, look at if social responsibility is fashionable, does that also allow you to also increase your margins with companies now to make sure that you're also returning more to the women?
Well, this is the work that we're trying to do all the time, and to have the partnership of Lacoste was a wonderful opportunity, and we hope to have some others in a very short time, you see. Well, the idea to work with this vision about social business is not mine. It's very, you see, update strategy for the both sides, you see, for companies, for brands, fashion brands, designers, and also the projects in communities. And I think that is wonderful. It's a new vision about social development.
Great. Maria Teresa Leal, best of luck with the rest of the project.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We're going to reassemble ourselves here for a few parting words at the Monocle Weekly. And to give us a breather, here's Casuarina again with a little interlude. Back with the Monocle Weekly, where it's halfway through. It's almost time to say goodbye to you. We have one more week, Andrew, and that's it.
I know. Well, amazing little interlude that was. I want that every week.
I know. Well, we've been talking. We want a live band in London. And in fact, we should probably say that, Casuarina, you're going to be in London. It's May 26th, I believe.
Yeah, right.
You're performing, correct?
Yeah.
Excellent. And I guess if you want more details, we can probably give them your site, but probably easier for our listeners to drop us a note at weekly@monocle.com. You're heading off, but I guess... You've got a big show, obviously, every Sunday.
Yeah,
it doesn't go away, does it, Zeka?
Not really. It's there.
Is there a summer break? I mean, obviously, it is summer season.
No, there's not. It's a news show, so we have to be there live every week.
Right.
It's every weekend, actually, which is pretty... It's quite a burden.
I should have asked you the top of the program. I mean, for a program that's been running so long, how long have you been the front man, and how many other people have gone before you?
As a TV... Oh, many. Many, indeed. Like a bunch. Maybe we're talking about 30, maybe, hosts, men and women, of course. And I'm hosting the show for the last 5 years, officially. But I've been involved with the show for 15 years already.
I'm just wondering, in terms of staffing, I mean, how big is the production team?
We have, like, a team of 30 producers among all the cities that we work with.
Sure.
The biggest one, of course, is in Rio. São Paulo is a big branch as well. But there's Brasília. And Recife is a big... we have a big office in Recife as well. So total, editors and everything, Fantastico works with like 60 to 70 people, which is big.
And how much talent in terms of how many other people in front of the camera?
Well, I share the hosting with a very, very nice lady called Patricia Poeta. And she's been doing the show with me for the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And of course, there are the reporters. I mean, as hosts, we have only two, actually. But there are like a bunch of reporters that are specifically tied to Fantastico.
So okay, so they're not reporting for the rest of the network. They're only for your show.
Yeah, for this group, yes. Yes, right. That's it.
Rob, and are you looking for any... potential sort of gigs down here?
Yeah, I am.
You're on radio program.
I feel I've had sunstroke for this show. I'm back.
I know. Well, you are recovering. I mean,
I'm a bit.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put a bit of after sun on the nose. go and find some more wonderful bands.
Is that the only place?
Yeah. Yes.
No, but it's Rob, when we did, I'm just going to bring you back into the program a little bit more because we had we went to one of your finds, Andrew, which is, you know, probably not a find to lots of listeners, but I think one of the most remarkable music stores. I just wanted actually the cabinets alone. I mean, it was amazing to see these incredible solid wood. I imagine that they were some very sort of rare tropical Brazilian wood, which you wouldn't be allowed to forest anymore. But anyway,
possibly not.
We're talking about modern sound. It was an amazing thing, you know, in London where all the CD shops are dying off, where it's kind of that kind of that buying of CDs has fallen apart. What was great was to kind of walk in and just see this massive room, and also just a really interesting way of running it, that they had a live band playing, they were serving good drinks. The whole thing was
this
wonderful.
This is going to have a landmark. They started in the 80s, and they were the only place in Rio where you could find like import records actually from London and stuff. And now they got so big and so cool, and they have the space now. It's like they're...
Yeah, and it was interesting to see, it was almost on cue that you had that yeah. that one Japanese guy who was sort of like literally like going through sort of, you know, the rarest Brazilian music, sort of looking for that one artist. It was fantastic to see.
It's a real lesson. I mean, that record shop is a real lesson in how to do it. You know, you trudge around so many places and it's same old, and that was amazing model for how to run something like that.
Yeah, and it just looked incredibly modern. I mean, so many people who are in the business or not in the business anymore of trying to retail music or trying to figure it out. And I thought that this was, you know, an absolutely sort of spot on model. So you have to take us to some more places this week, Andrew.
I will do.
Also, I liked Argumento. The bookshop was great as well. Again, with a fantastic little cafe in the back. And then this super tight, little edited, you know, selection, not just of CDs, but also great DVDs as well. Rob, we did a bit of damage. Andrew didn't see what the cash is. Maybe you did when you were there in January. So yeah. I'm not sure what other treasures you've got for us.
The other thing that was great was that they're open till midnight.
I know.
Yeah.
So you can go in and, you know, you think, I want some music tonight.
And midnight, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
Indeed. Which is brilliant.
Well, this bookshop was like featured in a soap opera. It became like a set, you see, for the development of the story of the soap operas. That's how popular it is.
I think there's a bit of a soap opera going on in there the other day when we were
Certainly when people looking at your face, they thought you were sort of... It was just a freak out of the nature section.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. Should we save...
That's really nice.
Should we save Rob's culinary tour of Rio till next week's show? I think we should.
Let's not talk about it.
Well, that's all for part one of our special edition Monocle Weekly programs from Rio de Janeiro. Today's show was produced by Alex Mills, and we were graciously hosted in the Visom studio in Sao Conrado here in Rio de Janeiro. Our band today in the studio has been Cajarinha, with Daniel Montes on guitar, Gabriel Azevedo on percussion and vocals, João Cavalcante on percussion and vocals, João Fernando on mandolin and vocals, and Rafael Freire on the cavaquinho and vocals. If you want a daily dose of Monocle, then don't forget to check out our daily Monocle column at monocle.com. And if you have any thoughts or comments on today's show, then please do send us an email around the pool at the Copacabana Palace to weekly@monocle.com. Our new April edition is hitting streets around the world, so do check it out, or you can also subscribe via our website. We'll be sticking around in Rio for another week when we hope to catch up with the city's mayor. But for now, from Rio, I'm Tyler Brulé.
I'm Andrew Tuck.
I'm Zeca Camargo.
I'm Robert Bound.
And we'll be seeing you here next week. But before we go, here's Cajarinha one more time with Vasa Rui.
Mostro minha face suja, não lhe dou a tapa, eu bem te avisei, eu sou de amargar, sou sabor fel na esperança, sou de sorrir e desdenhar, não adianta nem tentar, porque eu sou vaso ruim, pode confiar, é que eu sou vaso ruim, pode confiar, não há muito investimento, assim perda de tempo. Não vai cicatrizar. Não vai não, mas não vai cicatrizar. Eu sou pra quem gosta da dor, sou difícil de aguentar. Não espere muito de mim, pois não.
saudade. Que você quer ficar? Vai embora, bata a porta e nem pense em reclamar. Sou da rua, sou de lua, já bati, já cansei de apanhar. Junte todos os seus cacos e arranje outro lugar. Mas me irrita que eu mostro, mostro minha face suja. Não lhe dou a tapa, eu bem te avisei. Eu sou de amargar, sou de sabor fel na esperança. Eu sou de sorrir e desdenhar. Não adianta nem tentar. O que eu sou faz o ruim, pode confiar. É que eu sou muito ruim, pode confiar. Não há muito investimento, assim perda de tempo. Vaso ruim não quebra, pra que vou chorar? Não pego de leve, como um poeta. Te machuco leve, a ferida aberta não vai cicatrizar. Não vai não, mas não vai cicatrizar. Cicatrizar, já falei, mas não vai. Não vai cicatrizar. Não vai, não. Mas não vai cicatrizar. Vai, mano.